Welcome to the You on the Camino de Santiago podcast, Season 4. This podcast is for and about people getting ready for their first ever pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago in Spain, France, and Portugal. With your host, Camino guide, and longtime pilgrim, Nancy Reynolds of the Camino Experience. Welcome back to this week's episode of the podcast. This is Nancy. Happy to be hanging out with you, whether you are listening in while doing a training walk for the Camino, or driving to work, dreaming of your pilgrimage, or sitting on the couch with a glass of wine or a coffee. In case you are tuning in for the first time, hello and welcome to you. I will quickly mention that if you are a first-time listener, and a first-time pilgrim as well, you may want to go back to the beginning of this podcast series, all the way to Season 1, Episode 1, and start where we all started, with that first round of questions. What is the Camino? And what does it mean to do the Camino? When is the best time to go? How long does it take? What boots do I need to get? How much does it cost? And so on. But wait, don't go yet, because I have another first-time pilgrim conversation for you today with Josh from Corpus Christi, Texas, who is on his way to the airport as this episode releases. Josh heard the Camino call and said a quick yes. How quick? Just wait. I love what Josh shared with me. He said that he realized that he had to stop looking for reasons not to walk the Camino and just go. Now. During our conversation, I will also introduce you to my favorite Spanish phrase. As someone whose Spanish language skills are, well, I'll say pretty mediocre, especially my listening skills, this phrase is a lifesaver. Before we get to Josh, though, I want to share with you an exciting opportunity for pilgrims who want to go deeper into the inner journey of the Camino. You may remember me talking about my friend, Kim, who owns the guest house in the village of Robinal del Camino on the Frances route. The guest house is called the Stone Boat, and Kim offers retreat space for writers and other creatives during the winter months, and overnight stays during parts of the walking season. I had the opportunity to spend 3 weeks in retreat there last year, and my stay overlapped with Camino guidebook author Bibi Bahrami's writing retreat. You can listen to the conversation we had at the Stone Boat in Season 3, Episode 15. What I discovered from being there, from working on creative projects directly on the Camino Trail, is that there is a wonderful and mystical sense of being in another space and time. I was able to explore more deeply questions like, what is the Camino? What is the Camino to me or for me? And what do I want to create and give as my gifts to the world? So when Kim shared with me her plans to co-host a retreat for writers, I knew I had to share it with my listeners. Let me start with the name of the retreat, because that will immediately give you a sense of what this is about. It's called The Writer's Way on a Pilgrim Path, and there are two parts to it. The first part is a 10-day retreat in the beautiful village of Castrillo de los Pulvazares, which is located just a few kilometers off the Camino Trail between Robinal del Camino and the city of Astorga. I'm going to direct you to Kim's website in a moment so you can get all the details, but I'll just mention now that this is going to be so much more than 10 days of writing. There will be storytelling, sacred geometry, petroglyphs, a visit to an ancient Visigoth chapel, fire circles, and labyrinths, along with healthy and delicious meals, local wines, and your own private sleeping room. And it will all be led by four experienced and talented facilitators who know how to guide you inward and bring forth your own story. That's all part one. The second part is a 12-day pilgrimage from the retreat center to Santiago de Compostela, with writing experiences woven into the pilgrimage. Everything is prearranged for you so you can focus on walking, writing, and going within. The walk is curated by Kim, who understands the Camino Road and the Camino experience more deeply, I have to say, than anyone else I know. And it's from her 20 years as a pilgrim and more than 5 years living directly on the trail. The retreat begins on June 1st this year, so I want to encourage you to check this out soon. Their max capacity is 12 people, but there are still some spots left. And if you aren't able to make it for June this year, be sure to get on Kim's email list and she'll keep you updated on future retreats, plus some other cool things she's working on for the Stone Boat. Kim's website is in the show notes, but it's super easy to remember. So here it is, thestoneboat.com. When you go to the website, I'll encourage you to start at the bottom of the homepage to get on Kim's email list. Then, at the top of the homepage, you'll find a link for the Writer's Way Retreat 2024. Click on that, and you'll go to the main page that has all the information about both parts of the retreat. There are so many ways to do the Camino, so many ways to make the pilgrimage. If writing is your way, I hope you'll check out this retreat. Again, that's thestoneboat.com. Okay, shall we meet Joshua? Joshua, hi. Thank you so much for being with me on the podcast today.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here and speaking with you.
When I got your request to be on the podcast, you know, I'll be honest, I have pretty much filled up season four and have it all laid out for the 20 episodes, but I got yours and I went, whoa, drop everything. I got to talk to this guy before he leaves for Spain or France or wherever. So let's get the pin in the map so that people know why I was so urgently wanting to talk with you and why I dropped everything to get you on the podcast. When are you going? How long will you be out there?
I leave from South Texas, where I live in Corpus Christi, Texas. I fly out March 5th. I don't arrive in France till March 6th, and I don't arrive in St. John till March 7th. And that is my plan, to leave from St. John Pied-à-Port on March 8th, that
March
morning.
8th.
Yeah. And I stress the word plan because it's, I kind of feel like so much can go wrong logistically between leaving Texas and arriving in St. John. And that's for myself. It may not happen that way, but I will still eventually get there.
You will get there. And I think I love that you said that, because things do, how should I say this? I usually say things go sideways, but I don't like to empower that. So what I would say instead is sometimes we just have to take a moment and yell out, plot twist, something just happened that I wasn't expecting. So we got a lot to talk about, because you also shared with me that this is your first time traveling overseas. So we're going to talk about that. Let's finish putting the pin in the map, though. You'll start in Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port. Mm-hmm. How much time do you have and where do you plan to finish?
So I plan on doing the entire way, all the way to Santiago de Compostela. I have budgeted 30 to 35 days.
Okay.
Listening to your podcast reminded me to do the math, you know, how many kilometers I could actually walk per day. And I have the guidebook, and I've, again, listening to your podcast, I've reminded myself, I do not have to do these stages as they are set. But since I do have to come back home to my family and to my job, I do not want to be gone for longer than 5 weeks.
Gotcha.
And of course, travel time. I have to budget 3 days on either side just to get back to the States and back to my home in South Texas. So 30 to 35 days is the goal. I've heard so many stories of, like, you know, just take your time, things happen, plot twist. My main concern, honestly, is weather. It is March.
Yeah.
It is colder. There's a winter element up there that I am unfamiliar with, but I've heard enough about. So that is my only concern, is what the weather may be like, and if it will slow me down at all.
Gotcha. We'll talk about the weather too and see what we need to be prepared for. But I want to back up just a little bit to make sure that we caught that you're leaving in a week and a half. And the reason I want to emphasize that is because I want you to share with us when you decided to go walk the Camino. When did you make that decision?
So it was approximately the second week of February. I work for a hotel company, wherein my job in our portfolio of hotels is I negotiate corporate contracts. So these corporate travelers consistently use our hotels. The goal is for them to solely use our hotels. Mm-hmm. And they're mainly extended stay. I deal with a lot of commercial industrial contractors who come in from all over the country on jobs that are going to last 18 months.
Okay.
We live in a very industrial area. So there's a lot going on. Well, this first quarter of 2024, we've been blessed, and my hotels are at a very high occupancy consistency for 3 months. So beginning of February, I was in this fog of, I wake up, check my email, go to the office. 2 to 3 hours in, I'm pretty much done with my day. It's all administrative, and I knocked that out. So after a few weeks of that, I was telling my wife, I feel like I need to go somewhere. I haven't had a big trip since her and I got married. I did the Grand Canyon from rim to rim to rim with a few friends. And that was my last big excursion outside of our marriage. We got married in Zion National Park, and we had to hike 7 miles to get to our photography point.
Wow.
The reason I love my wife is because she supports these things, and she comes along with me whenever she can.
Love that.
So I was getting wanderlust, to be quite honest. So I finally had a conversation with the owners of my company and said, hey, look, we're in a good spot. You could afford to not have me around, and we're still going to be okay. And they were graciously very supportive. They know I like to get up and go when I can. And so we're calling it a sabbatical. And they said, hey, go wherever you want. Just when you make a decision, let's sit down and let us know. So once I got their green light, I went to my wife and says, hey, my job is I can take off for about a month with no consequences. So she said, how about the Appalachian Trail? It's been one of your dreams. I said, well, I can't do it in a month. What works out perfectly is the Camino de Santiago, which, as many others, I discovered by watching the movie The Way, which I watch religiously every few months, just to keep my dreams alive.
I love it. We're going to talk about your dreams a little bit more in a moment. Let's finish this how you got to where you are story, though.
Yeah. So she said, you know what? Go, but think about the Appalachian Trail. And I did, and I told myself, I'm going to be on the Appalachian Trail thinking you could be in Spain right now walking the Camino. And so I said, you know what? Forget the Appalachian Trail. This is a plan. Went back, talked to my wife and my boss again. I said, this is what I want to do. They said, do it. Well, again, I knew that I had to go now. Like 2 months from now, my job landscape could absolutely change. So I had to just strike while the iron's hot. And within 2 weeks, I had my flight. I had my first night's hotel. I'm flying into Bordeaux. And I had the Camino de Santiago guide on Amazon, and some maps of France, some maps of Spain. And I joined the Americans on the Camino Facebook group page and started crowdsourcing information. And I came across your podcast. And I've been listening to that almost every single morning on my walks to the gym. I live about a mile away from my gym, and I walk every morning. And it has been the greatest source of not just information, but I feel now I have grown more familiar with the Camino as opposed to just reading it in the guide. From your experiences and you sharing experiences with you sharing experiences with other first timers. And I realized, okay, I can do this. I have a little bit of stress, but I backpack a lot, so I didn't have to buy any gear. There's no real preparation other than logistics.
You are leaving soon. Yeah. So I want to make sure we do the math on that. You from yes to departure is about 3.5 weeks.
About 3 weeks. Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Now I'm curious. One of the things I wanted to ask if you'd clarify is when your wife said she would rather that you walk the Appalachian Trail, was that a strong feeling? And what was behind that? Why was she thinking that instead of the Camino?
She's from North Carolina. She lives in that part. She grew up in that part of the country.
Okay.
And she also knows that's one of my dreams.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be able to complete it. You know, that's at least 6 months of my life.
Yeah.
And I wanted something that I could complete. Yeah. And I kept on coming back to the Camino. I kept on coming back to the Camino. The John Muir Trail in California was also a thought, but it's a lot, you know, winter and snow. I knew that it's not the right time of the year for it. So again,
exactly.
It's like all the other options. I kept on coming back to the Camino over the course of 2 or 3 days. And so I just had to tell myself, stop looking for reasons not to go to the Camino.
I love it.
Stop it.
I love it. I want to make sure my listeners are hearing this. Stop looking for reasons not to do it. Your heart is calling you to do this. And I love what you said about strike while the iron is hot now. Go do it now. You know, and some people have a long lead up and it's because there are logistics in their lives. They can't get away from work or caring for children or grandchildren or elderly parents, all kinds of reasons. And so there are reasons why people can't just go now, but I love that you jumped on this. So I want to go back to your dream of walking the Camino, because that's not a new dream. The Say Yes, Book the Ticket is new, but the dream is not. Will you share with us where the dream came from and really what the dream was when it sparked within you?
Well, there's a couple of answers. I mean, again, the movie The Way was incredibly inspiring. I had already known I wanted to explore Europe. Growing up, I explored most of the states. I've hiked and walked on many, many paths and, you know, all the touristy things you could do in the lower 48. And I'm definitely at a point in my life where I need to explore elsewhere, because growing up, I didn't have the means to leave the country.
Okay.
So I went and I explored what I could, where I could. But I always knew I wanted to, you know, you hear those romantic stories of backpacking through Europe.
Oh, yeah.
And that's always been a dream. But once I found out about the Camino, and since I obsess about things over the course of my life, even though I knew at that time, I probably would never walk it till I was well beyond 50. Like, when can I leave for a month and a half? Like, I'm going to have to be pretty well off or retired. But I would watch movies about it, watch YouTube videos, you know, read an article just to familiarize myself. And I'm glad I did, because when the opportunity presented itself, I already knew that I would be able to do it. It would still be difficult logistically, and I'd be definitely going into unfamiliar territory, but a slight obsession with it over the past 10 years of my life made it easy to choose this dream. This is what I'm going to do. You know, the John Muir Trail, do I want to do it? Yes. The Appalachian Trail, do I want to do it? Yes. Do I want to go to Iceland and do the Ring Road? Yes. But this I can do now, and I can't. None of those other experiences I think would compare to walking the Camino. It's like I said earlier, it's stop looking for reasons to go somewhere else.
I love it. So you're going.
So I'm going.
Going.
I did it. I booked the flights. I honestly, the hardest part is figuring out how to get there.
Yes. And you know what? That's the most frequently asked question on Facebook right now. Everybody is like,
okay, I got to Madrid, I got to Paris. How do I get to Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port? And yes. I know the answer to that. So you were saying that for many years you had this in your mind as what you'll do when you retire or when mm-hmm. you're past 50 and you have enough money saved up, but you're not past 50 no, and you're doing it.
Yes. And I'm glad that in itself is a blessing because it was one of the discussions with my wife is like, I'm still able-bodied. I don't have any major health problems physically. I am healthy enough to just go on a walk. And again, since this is sort of a sabbatical, there's no financial consequence to me leaving. So I have to give credit to my wife and to the owners who I work for, because without their support, I'm still just a guy with a dream, you know? So they lovingly said, we understand, we're with you, go. We would never do this, but you want to.
I love that.
So go. Yes.
You're crazy, but go.
Yes. And so when people have asked about it, I was like, you know, this is going to probably be one of my greatest adventures of all time. And before this, it was the Grand Canyon, which was an incredible experience. But this is going to be a solo journey. And there's no mountain to climb. It's just a path to walk. And I'm thinking there's going to be I will hope for like some type of paradigm shift in my day-to-day thinking. Cause I go to work, you know, I deal with my clients, I deal with my ownership. I come home, kids have to go to volleyball practice. And, you know, my wife and I try to spend some time together. You know, we have a very busy life. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to it, but I expect a little bit of anxiety of peacefulness, because peacefulness isn't always comfortable for somebody like me who's always going.
I want to talk about that, but first I gotta catch something. You said mm-hmm. there's no mountain to climb. I'm going to encourage you to look at the elevation charts.
Oh yeah, yeah. So the Pyrenees, I have, and I guess I meant that sort of like metaphor, because I have attempted like summiting mountains here in the States. And you know, it's that in itself is a different type of preparation, but the walking up and down, I imagine a peaceful adventure.
Okay. So a 4,000 foot elevation change for you is not a big deal.
Yeah, no. When I don't know if you've ever done the Grand Canyon in and out a couple of times.
It's on my list. Now I know who to call when I'm ready to get yes. going on that. Cause that is on my list. Yeah.
Yeah, we did. One leg was from the bottom. We did almost, I think 8 miles out. Then we had to turn around and come back down to our campsite. And it was incredibly arduous. Mm. And of course, the sun's beating down on you. But to date, that's been my hardest trip. And again, I'm looking for something that's just going to be a little bit more peaceful.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what to expect still. I'm not planning on expectations. I am waiting to see how I feel.
I love that. It's like you're just poised and ready for the Camino to happen. And yes. then you see what happens. There are three mountain ranges, but none of them are as arduous as climbing up and down into and out of the Grand Canyon for sure. So mm-hmm. yeah. So this peaceful adventure, you also said something. And when you first reached out to me about the stress of getting ready for a peaceful adventure, would you talk about that a little bit?
So it's not what I expected. As I mentioned before, I have gear. I have backpacking gear. I don't really need to go and gear up. Okay. Believe it or not, I'm in a room with all my gear spread out and I'm trying to figure out what I don't need. But beyond that, it was the stress of removing myself from my daily life. And so my wife immediately, as supportive as she is, hey, I need you to take care of XYZ at the home before you leave. I need you to leave me all your passwords. And the same thing at work. Now I'm having to train a couple of people up to replace me for a month. Yeah. And I didn't think about that. I was like, I have to prepare people for when I'm gone. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time I felt a pang of guilt. Am I being selfish? They're supporting me. They're all about it. But I'm going to leave them with, here's what I normally do from day to day. This is your responsibility now. So that alone, with then wrapping my mind around packing what I need, not packing what I don't need, all that combined daily has been, once I booked the ticket, I have been thinking more of, is everything going to be okay while I'm away, as opposed to, I can't wait to leave. I can't wait to get to that layover in Dublin and arrive in Bordeaux. I had that for 2 days, and then it's been replaced with, Josh, before you go, we need you to do this.
Yeah. Holy smokes. Look at the to-do list now. Wow.
Yes. Well,
and I can hear in that a really strong commitment to you supporting the people who are supporting you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know too many people in my life, in my bubble, my part of the world, who aren't independently financially stable, can just say, hey, peace out. I'm going to leave my life for a little bit over a month and not have any worries or consequences. And so I go back to, without their support of me doing that, two people were, let's just call it codependent relationships. We need each other from day to day.
Yeah.
I don't want to leave them out in the lurch in any way, shape, or form. I don't want them to regret, man, I wish I wouldn't have let them go. I want them to still be happy for me. So whatever they need between now and then, I'm taken care of.
What I love about that, Josh, is that it reminds me that we, even if we go walk the Camino alone, there is a community or a family or a circle of friends behind us that are holding the space at home while we go on pilgrimage. And the history of pilgrimage, it's very much that. Everyone doesn't go on pilgrimage. In some traditions, one person from the village gets to go, and they go complete the pilgrimage and bring back the benefit or the message or the whatever the oracle had to say back to their circle. So we need those people at home who are going to continue to hold down the fort and to...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I also wanted to comment on... Well, I'm thinking about your work team. And what it reminds me of is the spiritual law of reciprocity. And oftentimes we think that reciprocating or reciprocity is actually a tally sheet. Like, I'll do this for you, you do this for me. I do this for you, you do this for me. And it's supposed to be equal. And when we actually step back and get some distance from it, I can see with your situation, you've earned this support. In some ways, by doing your job well and by contributing to your company and contributing to your family, it's almost as if the stage has been set for something good to come back at you.
I hope so. I've cautioned myself from thinking that way, because I think of feelings of arrogance, like, look what I did. I can go out and do this now. But yeah, I just can't take any type of credit without giving it again to my wife and to my boss. Cause I do like to think we have a symbiotic relationship.
That's it.
And we've grown into this over the years. And my wife, she's a chief in the Navy. And so she has to leave for months at a time every once in a while. And, my job is to stay here and make sure the house is in order and the kids are good. That's what you do in a marriage. And, that's exactly what she told me. She's like, look, I leave a lot. You stay here and take care of things. You leaving for a month is not a big deal for me to stay home and take care of things. Like,
I love it.
So I keep on thinking, as well as I've worked to get myself to this place, I still wouldn't be here without the opportunities my job gives me and without my wife, who, we mutually support each other. There's no way I could say, hey, look what I did without them.
That's the point exactly. When we look at the law of reciprocity, it's not a big tally sheet, but the more you give, the more you receive. We already know that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you've been giving and it's coming back at you. And I would suspect that arrogance is not a risk factor here, because you are approaching this so humbly and so respectfully for what this gift is for you. Just an observation.
Yes. Well, I think the humility comes from the, again, I've never been to Europe. So I, you know, did a quick, let me research, you know, Euros and the guidebook has phrases for Spanish. Cause even though I lived down in South Texas, I didn't grow up speaking Spanish. Okay. I know a few phrases so that I know that I don't know a lot. And over there, I am going to be out of my element. And I cannot approach and say, look, I know what I'm doing. I got this. All I can say is I know that I'm going there. I know how I'm getting there. Everything after that, I'm going to have to ask for help quite often. Yeah. I don't see how anybody could approach us and say, hey, look, I got this. I'm good. There is a humility to preparing. And I also want to be in a, I don't know if spiritual is the right term, but I also want to be in the right headspace for to, like I said earlier, I don't have any real expectations other than I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what I'm going to soak up, but I want to be in a place where I could soak it up. Like you said, if there's a plot twist or there's something that I didn't expect to find along the way, I want to be open to it.
Yeah. I think you're in a good headspace. I'll use your term. It's a good headspace. And I love that this is your first trip to Europe. Is there anything else going on in your head about that?
No, just the, you know, how am I going to, you know, that discomfort, because it will be uncomfortable not knowing exactly what to say or exactly what to ask. And, you know, the other half of that is not understanding what you're being told. I know that's going to happen. That's actually my number one fear is, you know, not understanding something and going the wrong way or saying the wrong thing.
Sure.
Those are really my fears.
My favorite phrase in Spanish, this is the one that I use a lot, is muéstrame, which means show me. Muéstrame, por favor. Show me. I speak enough Spanish to get by, but my weakest sense is my auditory learning. And so when people speak to me, I'm like, okay, something happens at 7. I have no idea what, but excellent, 7 o'clock somewhere. Yeah. So I often will just say, muéstrame, por favor, please show me.
Okay. Well, that's going to help a lot because I was wondering, like, how am I going to communicate? Like, I don't really understand. But, you know, going to Europe for the first time has, my wife and I have talked about, again, we taking trips to Scotland, to Ireland and Iceland and, you know, London. And so, again, it's, I'm doing something that she knows she wouldn't do. Now, if I had said, hey, look, I'm going to go spend a month in London, she would have said, I don't think so. I want to go to London too. You're going to wait on that one. So again, I didn't really have options. I knew it was going to be a trekking journey. Okay. And I have to go to Europe. I have to do the Camino. Like, it's, how can I not?
It all perfectly came together. Every single thing you've said has shown, it's almost like a big giant yellow arrow going, Josh, you're going this way. You're going to the Camino. So let's talk about your gear. You said that you are a backpacker. And usually when people say a backpacker, that means that they have a big bag. They put in a tent and food and sleeping bag and a cook stove and toiletries and kit and all that stuff. So how are you preparing with your gear for the Camino? And how is it different from if you were doing a backpacking trip?
The major difference is the obvious one, where I don't need a tent. I don't need a cook stove. And so my pack is going to be a lot lighter. And that was part of my research. Like, I already knew, like, hey, there's going to be albergues along the way. But again, crowdsourcing the information and studying. So, like, I know I don't need this, Josh. You're not going to be in the wilderness where you have to filter water from day to day. Because I've been in those situations. And, you know, ironically enough, even though this is going to be the most civilized trek I take, I am the most worried about this one. I don't want to overpack. And so it's a process for me. Like, I have everything laid out in front of me. And then I'll sit on it for a day. I'll read an article and say, you know what? I don't need that. And forgive me. The other question was, how am I preparing? There was another there was the first part of that question about what's the difference.
Essentially just how it's, how backpacking gear is different from what, from the Camino gear.
Oh yeah. It's just, you know, I don't need as much. I'm not going to have to cook food in my little stove along the way. So, you know, it's good that, you know, that stressor is gone of survival. Because I'm not going to have to be looking for ways to survive from day to day like I would out in the Pacific Northwest, where
right.
I'm on the backside of a mountain for a week, knowing that there's the only way somebody's getting me out of trouble is if I do a helicopter rescue, you know? And so there's a lot of survival gear that I won't need. It's clothes, it's food. And to be honest, I have been asking myself, because I have a pretty decent sized backpack. Man, do I need that? Do I need that big one? But I don't have a smaller one. This is my gear, you know? So in that ways, it's going to be a lot different. But in my brain, then it clicks to, all right, then your survival is making sure you find open albergues. And that is where I know, I read somewhere that when you go into St. John, the tour of the mosques will have an updated list, hopefully, of the open albergue. Because that's where, as much as I plan, it all depends on the huge X factors when I get to St. John and they say, here's what's open, here's what's not. I'm going to have to then pull out my notebook and go, okay, how can we pass these next 2 or 3 days to make sure that I'm not looking forward to a town to rest or sleep and there's nowhere to stay. So that part is a little bit stressful for me right now.
Yeah, definitely. I'll put in the show notes and I'll send to you, Josh. There's a website that keeps track of albergues that are open in the winter.
Okay, I'd love that.
The list that you get in Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port is a 6-page document that lists all the albergues, and then you have to go through and find the ones that are open year round. And then another trick is to ask the host where you are, where the next open albergue is, because very often they're in contact with each other and they know what's open up ahead. And they might even know if you need to call in advance to let them know you're coming, or if you have to call when you get there to find the person with the key to let you in. So there's another version of romance to walking in the winter months.
Yes. The winter months did. It scared me for a day. Day or night, because as I was looking at the routes and I downloaded an app and everything along the Napoleon route was closed. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's winter.
What have I done?
And everybody was like, they're not open up to April 1st. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is, but again, luckily there is some person in Spain, in Santiago, who consistently uploads the amount of pilgrims who have reached Santiago that day on Facebook.
Yes.
And so I'm like, okay, well, they're coming from somewhere.
They're sleeping somewhere.
Yeah. So I did some more digging, found the Val Carlos route. And I was like, okay, I had a sleepless night. And finally, learning about the Val Carlos route to Roncesvalles, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
We could still do this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the thing is, too, Easter is March 25th this year, which means that many places will begin to open up the week before that. And then expect that week to be busy wherever you are. It could be busier than what you've been seeing. But yes, I'll get that list of the albergues that are open in the winter time.
Yeah, that's the scary part for me. Wherein, you know, when I backpack, if I'm tired, I'm pitching my tent right here and I'm good. Usually the most stressful thing is managing your food and your water. Shelters wherever I want it to be, where in this case, you know, managing my food and water won't be an issue. It's going to be finding a place to sleep. I was just going to say the same, but different.
Exactly. Really, you might still need to put some thought into where to find food, because there will be fewer places open than, say, in the season from April to October. But the thing I always remind people, the Spanish people have to eat too. And so places will be open for them to go to that you're welcome at, and the supermarkets and food shops will be open. So you will always be able to find something. It just might take a little bit more planning and a little bit more thinking ahead to make sure that you're in that town or village when the shop is open and when the bar is open.
Yes. And I read somewhere, because, you know, and again, my wife doesn't like this part of me. I over prepare so much, because I already know, I've been around long enough. I know there's going to be X factors. There's going to be something I can't control.
Yeah.
So I already told myself, like, once I get there, get, you know, two or three granola bars for that one day where, hey, I'm going through a town and they're all closed for lunch or whatever, yep. You know, or that time of day. Grocery stores, get stuff that, you know, will last 2 or 3 days, put it in my pack so I could make myself a sandwich or whatever it may be.
Yes.
That preparation, because I, again, never been going to Europe, not really knowing, you know, siestas and, you know, what their normal hours are. It's going to be all new to me.
Yeah.
That's going to be part of the adventure. So I know when I get there, I might have a pack full of a little bit too much food. You know, maybe I might bring, you know, too many sweaters because I know it's going to be cold. But it's like, once I get there, I'm hoping after the first few days, I kind of just, what's the word I'm looking for? Adapt.
You find your rhythm.
Yeah. And then get rid of what I don't need, you know, not just, you know, not just in my bag, but mentally, you know, spiritually, like, get rid of what you don't need and, you know, get into that rhythm.
That's the metaphor of the Camino right there. So you mentioned the weather earlier, not sure what the weather is going to be. And we know we can get a forecast about 10 days out, but what are you expecting and how are you preparing for the weather?
I have been looking up and just tracking, like, you know, the trends in temperature up there. But I, as much as I read the radar, everybody's like, man, there's going to be a rainstorm at least once or twice. It happens all the time. Snow, I don't know how it is up there. So I bought, I bought a rain poncho. That one I had to get a new one. Believe it or not, I've never carried one with me. I have a rain cover for my backpack. That's just my only fear, is getting stuck in some weather and maybe it's slowing me down. As far as getting wet, getting cold, I've been there before. You just trudge on. But, you know, trudging, I don't know if it'll slow me down. You know, if it gets to the point where, hey, you know, you're not going to make it to your goal. You have to have a backup plan because, you know, this is what the weather's like. It's, and also just getting going, because I'm human. If it's raining and it's 40 degrees outside, I don't want to get out of bed. I want to stay in bed.
But absolutely.
I'm going to have to get up and push myself anyway.
Yeah, you will. If you're staying in the albergues, because many of them close at 8 a.m. and you are expected to be out.
Yes. Yes. It's, again, it's going to be, I keep on calling it my peaceful adventure. You know, I'm not going to, you know, there's no real danger, but it's still an adventure, like going into a new town and a new village with a new experience every single day and waking up not knowing what lies ahead of you, really.
Yeah, that's the magic and mystery of the Camino. And I assert that no matter how much you plan and prepare, you are still going on a mystery tour.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And that's, you know, that's been the draw.
That's the appeal.
Yeah. You know, I've always, whenever I plan a trip or a trek, I admit I over prepare, but because I know there is so much unknown. So much unknown. I can't tell you. I mean, I took a wrong turn on a mountain once with my wife and we never reached the summit. And it was an hour in before we realized, oh man, we went the wrong way. And we had to come back. And this is also going to be the most exciting things, because I know that I'm going to be forced to finish. I don't have to just, if I take a wrong turn, hey, guess what? You took a day out of your way, but you're still on the path. You just keep on going.
And the chances of taking that much of a detour are very slim, because the local people have their eyes on the pilgrims. It is in nobody's interest for a pilgrim to get off the Camino. And so they keep an eye out for pilgrims.
Oh, okay.
And you might hear someone say, Peregrino, Peregrino. That means pilgrim. And they'll point you back to where you're supposed to be.
Oh, that's good to know.
And a general rule, if you walk for more than 15 minutes, 30 minutes max without seeing some sort of a trail marker, it's time to ask if you're still on the trail.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've gone in and zoomed in on like Google Earth and like, You know, it's these things that I know, it's like, you know, Josh, in 2 weeks from now, you're not going to remember what you're looking at. But it's, you know, where else can you go on a hike for a month and you just have people around guiding you and helping you, you know?
It's all set up.
So I'm still stressed, but I'm looking forward to that camaraderie, just the experience that I'll be honest, I've never had in my life in any trip that I've gone on, because, you know, on some of the treks I go there, you know, they're out in places where there aren't villages and towns. I've gone to get away from phone signals, and it's just going to be a different type of adventure.
I hope you'll come back on the podcast and tell us how it went.
Absolutely. It feels like a whirlwind right now. But again, I think once I get there and, like you said, get into my daily routine, my rhythm, it'll be at that point that I feel a lot better. And then, of course, just the goal of reaching Santiago that I've only seen on TV and read about in books, and experiencing that, I don't know if achievement's the right word, but just following in the paths of so many other pilgrims and people over that have traveled over thousands of years to reach that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be taking something back from it or leaving something behind once I get there, but I can't wait to find out.
Well, I so appreciate hearing your story and hearing what's going on in your mind and your heart and all of that. So thank you for sharing your story.
Well, thank you for having me. Like I said, your podcast has been a great companion on my morning walks.
I appreciate hearing that. Yeah, thank you. When I started the podcast, it took me probably a few episodes to realize, wait a minute, people are training to this. I get to go on your daily walk with you as you get ready for the Camino. So
yes,
I love that. It's a really lovely bonus for me to be able to share that with you. Before we wrap up, let me ask, are there any questions that I can answer for you?
You know, I wish I could say yes, but in the past week and a half, I've realized how the pilgrim community is so small, yet so vast. I have asked questions on Facebook, and immediately I get a message, hey, here's my email, email me this. And sure enough, like one of them was from a tourism office finding the Val Carlos route. Uh-huh. And in my email inbox, there was photos of a lady who was out of Houston, I believe, here in Texas. And she's like, here's pictures of the book and the map that my husband used. This will get you from the tourism office to the Camino. And it's like, wow, they're so incredibly helpful. I can't leave saying, man, like I didn't have any help along the way. It was people that I had no idea who they are saying, here's a tip. You asked this question. Here's your answer. Reach out to me if you need anything else. So with your podcast coupled with all that.
You're in good shape.
Yeah. You know, it's not just me preparing. It's everybody surrounding myself and other pilgrims saying, hey, we're here to help you out and point you in the right direction, like you said. And to be honest, you know, I don't know what to ask of you since you've already answered some of the things on the podcast, you know.
That's okay too. That's reassuring to me. It truly is a global community of pilgrims, and it is I think people have had such transformational experiences that they want more people to have transformational experiences. Mm-hmm. I think we become better people when we get these transformational times in our lives, and then we give more to our communities and our families and our friends. And imagine if everyone had this experience or something similar.
Yes. I hope to come back with a different worldview. I really do. It may not be a vastly different one, but how can you go on this walk and not come back a little bit changed?
That's it right there. Josh, thank you so much. Just a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you.